afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee to order. Today is Tuesday, March 30th. Yep. Let the record reflect the time is 3:30 p.m. Today we have present Vice Chair Senator Myers. Welcome. And Senator Gray Jackson. Welcome.
Thank you.
And myself, Chair Hughes. Please silence or turn off your cell phones. We've got some feedback. We're back on the record. We worked out the technical difficulties. I would like to thank Christopher Dickrell with Senate Records for assisting us, as well as Larson Walters with the LIO. Thank you very much. And of course, Dawson is our aide, and we appreciate the work he does to get everything ready for us. We have two items on the agenda today. First, we'll hear Senate Bill 72, which is the school's Civics Education Bill, sponsored by Senator Stevens, SB 72, and we will be holding our initial hearing. So if Senator Stevens and his aide would like to come, and while they're getting situated, I'll just mention that after this, we'll be taking up Senate Bill 72, sponsored by Senator Begich. It is SB 17, Energy Efficiency and Policy, Public Buildings. We'll walk through the summary of the changes to the bill, and then we plan to take public testimony today. And the committee substitute, by the way, was distributed to you earlier electronically, and I'm hopeful you had time to review it, but you'll also have a chance to answer questions. So at this time, we will begin with SB 72. Senator Stevens and Mr. Lampkin, welcome to our committee. Please put yourself on the record and tell us all about SB 72.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Stevens, Kodiak, thanks so much for hearing this bill. It's an important one to me because I realize that when we, and you're very involved in education, when we started education in this country, free public education, one of the reasons that it was needed was to develop a citizenship, a citizenry, so that people going through schools would be become citizens, would know what it means to be a citizen of this country, and would participate in voting and the means of being a citizen, as certainly everyone in this room is doing. Basically, it's a recognition that there's been a lot of apathy in this country, a lot of division, a lot of focus, rightly so in many ways, on math science and sort of at the expense of the liberal arts, at the expense of history and politics and law. So other states have been looking into this, certainly, and we're not the only one, but it's important that we develop a curriculum, that we have exams in civics, that we observe things like flag etiquette and all those sorts of things, to make sure that people are more involved in the government that we do have, that they register to vote, that they become taking positions of leadership like you were doing. Senate Bill 72 is one effort in that, and many efforts going along to restore an understanding of what it means to be an American citizen among our youngest generations, and teach them about what it means to be in the system of government that we have. So to reverse this trend, Madam Chair, I think it's important that we make an investment in the future of our country and recognize the cultural diversity of our state particularly. In this bill, there's an exit exam on civics for graduating seniors. Not necessarily a need to pass it, a high-stakes exam, but simply to take it. It directs the Department of Education, and they've been quite cooperative in this, to develop our own unique Alaska civics and curriculum assessment. And certainly an important part of this to recognize the importance of including Alaska Native tribal government system as well. So I'll turn it over to my staffer, Tim Lampkin, who will go into some of the details.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Mr. Lampkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Before you is a bill that's had quite a evolution. There's been a number of task forces over the years that have come forward with a variety of recommendations. one of them consistently being to review and update our standards and even to develop curriculum for the state, and that's what this bill reflects. The version before you, version I, is a departure from the original one where we've stepped away from the high-stakes exam calling for the naturalization test administered by the Department of Homeland Security, and instead to embrace the idea that the state develop its own curriculum, and that curriculum be made available to districts, and that an assessment be established and administered through the department based on those standards. Another important component of this bill would recognize that we include not only traditional American government, but as well as state government studies, but very importantly, Alaska Native tribal government systems. And we have some key folks online available to address that specifically. That's the summary of the bill, Madam Chair. I'm happy to go into the sectional. It might be a little bit repetitive, though.
Why don't you give us anything in the sectional that you didn't cover so we at least touched on it and done our duty?
So section one is AS 1403076 that relates to public schools, adding a new section directing the State Board of Education or Development to develop curriculum and a related assessment aligned with our state standards regarding government and citizenship to include U.S. federal government, Alaska state government, and Alaska tribal government, and that it requires students to take the assessment established there in order to receive a high school diploma. Of course, there'd be some exceptions available as detailed in the bill for students with special needs, but schools are to document on students' transcripts when they have taken the exam. In this case, we purposefully did not include a requirement that they pass the exam per se, but that they simply take it. That, of course, is a policy discussion I'm sure we'll get into. Section 2 is 1407168, which relates to reporting requirements by the State Board, and to include in their annual report a description of that civics curriculum that was developed and of the student performance on the assessment that was described. There's an effective date in Section 3 of July 1st, 2022. That concludes the sectional, Madam Chair.
I'm taking out ease. We're back on the record. Are there questions from members before we do have invited testimony on the line, which might trigger more questions or maybe answer some you have in mind if you'd like to go forward and listen to the invited testimony. We have Dr. Michael Johnson, the Commissioner of the Department of Education Early Development. And we'll start with him. Commissioner, are you online? Can you hear me? And can you begin your testimony? Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Chair Hughes, this is Michael Johnson for the record, and I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Education Early Development. Can you hear me okay?
We can, nice and clear.
All right, great. Well, thank you. Well, thank you for the opportunity to participate in today's hearing on Senate Bill 72. I want to especially thank Senator Stevens, who has not wavered for years in making sure that our public education system is built upon the purpose of civics education. We can all regret that more policymakers in our country have not shared his efforts. Civics education is not a new innovation. It's timeless wisdom that we have somehow forgotten. Plato said that schools should create good men and women who act nobly. If we have an education system that does less than that, all our other efforts for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness will be thwarted. According to a study from the Woodrow Wilson National Fellowship Foundation, only 36% of Americans passed a multiple choice U.S. citizenship test. Less than 25% know why we fought the British. Only 24% could name a single thing that Benjamin Franklin was famous for. 37% think he invented the light bulb, and he didn't. Here's the proof in the pudding that Senator Stevens is right to introduce this bill. 74% of people 65 and older scored the best. answering at least 6 out of 10 questions correctly. But only 19 of those 45 and younger passed. That's 81% scoring 59% or lower on that particular exam. And though I don't have specific data, I am confident that we would be alarmed by how few of our fellow citizens in Alaska understand Alaska Native history and layers of tribal governance. The presentation in Tribal Affairs Committee in the House on March 4th is a great example of what Alaska-specific civics education could look like. And I'll just note, since Liz is on, that that was a presentation by First Alaskans Institute. And she and I have talked about that before. This bill is not a new coat of paint on our public education system. It's a much-needed effort to repair the foundation. Civics education is about purpose. A public education system without clear purpose is more expensive, ineffective, and corrosive to our society. A public education system with purpose is more efficient, more effective, and improves our society. The legislature's purpose statement for education is clear in Alaska Statute 1403015. It says, it is the policy of this state that the purpose of education is to help ensure that all students will succeed in their education and work, shape worthwhile and satisfying lives for themselves, exemplify the best values of society, and be effective in improving the character and quality of the world about them. That's a great description of the outcome of an education purposed with civics. It is also the State Board of Education's vision statement. We spend over 160 billion pennies each year on our public education system, and every single one of them should have a purpose related to civics education. These past months, my fear has been that we will lower the bar and that we'll settle for less. Of course, we all want schools to be open, but I sure hope that that's not our new benchmark. Open is good. Purposeful and effective is essential, and at times, more difficult. A few months after giving his Go to the Moon speech, John Kennedy addressed a growing public questioning of why we should spend all of that money to go to the moon. The president said at a speech later that year, "We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard, because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills." Going to the moon was not about improving the moon. It was about making America better. So let's not storm the Capitol. Let's teach kids to read. Let's inspire them to run for school board, run for mayor, and even run for the legislature. Let's show them how to work together to create good policy. Let's teach them how to value liberty and never take it for granted. Let's show them how to embrace what is difficult because it makes us better and makes us more thankful. In his original Go to the Moon speech, President Kennedy said, "For while we cannot guarantee that we shall one day be first, we can guarantee that any failure to make this effort will make us last." Please let me know how I can help you in this effort on this bill and other legislation. Thank you for the opportunity to share today.
Thank you, Commissioner. Do members have any questions? Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a little bit of a comment and a little bit of a question. So when this bill was first put forward a couple of months ago, I was intrigued, and I had a couple of constituents that emailed me asking me to support it. And it was interesting to me. And then I saw it coming before us today, and I went back and I looked through the new CS, and I was a little dismayed. I have to be honest. It took what was a pretty straightforward, concrete proposition and turned it into something a bit more amorphous. You talked about, Commissioner Johnson, you talked about the education and how it should connect to the values of our society. You talked about it being purposeful And I got to admit, with what I see in here, it looks like the values and the purpose are what got lost in some of the changes. Instead of talking about an exam that simply examined the understanding of government that we expect out of people coming to our country, we came up with a curriculum and an assessment that includes government, citizenship, and a history of systems of government in the United States. And I make the argument that one of the problems that we're having these days is not just that we haven't educated our kids on government and citizenship, but that we don't agree on what that means anymore. What is the purpose of government, and what does it mean to be a good citizen? And I'd say over the last 40, 50 years that those have changed. And so it makes me hesitant to agree to something that doesn't, to agree to something, to ask to teach a set of values when I don't know what that set of values are. And so I'm curious if the department could provide any sort of idea of the direction that they want to go in creating that curriculum.
Commissioner?
Through the chair, Senator Myers, thank you for the question. I think some of it probably is best answered by the bill sponsor and staff in terms of some of the changes. But I would think, the department will, it won't be just the department creating the standards in the curriculum. We have a process that the state board has laid out where we involve stakeholders, community folks, educators in developing any kind of standards and curriculum to make sure it's representative, that there's a public process, there's opportunity for public input and public comment on anything that the state board adopts. And so it wouldn't be just the department's notion of direction, it would be a public process. Along with that, I would say, fundamental to purpose is also fact. And so I would hope that the curriculum and the standards would include facts about our country and our history, including Alaska's unique history and what's happened up here.
Would the sponsor like to also answer that question, Senator Stevens?
Well, thank you. I'll certainly try to. I'm not exactly sure, Senator, what you're getting at, but maybe I understand that this is about politics, but it's not political. I don't think there's any attempt to teach anyone to be a Republican or a Democrat. I think it's to understand what it means to be an American citizen, and I think the commissioner has a great grasp of that. You should understand that we're doing this really well in some places. I mean, I met teachers throughout Alaska, government teachers, who are doing a tremendous job in educating their kids on what it means to be an American citizen, what our history is all about, and the importance of voting, the importance of participating. A little off the topic, I was a different generation, I suppose, and I could not vote until I was 21. That was the requirement in Alaska, in the United States. You could not vote until you were 21. I was in college when I could vote. It meant so much to me to be able to vote, and I studied it, I learned about it, and I knew what was going on from high school classes. So I guess I want to say that there are some great teachers out there. I had some great teachers when I went through school who really made you proud to be an American citizen. It's not about the party politics, not about the issues that we deal with here so much, but rather the bigger picture of what it means to be a citizen. So I'm not exactly sure what you mean by values, but the value of citizenship is sort of rises above all of the other issues, I think.
Okay, thank you. And thank you, Commissioner. We appreciate your passionate presentation, and I'd actually like, if you have that in writing, I'd love a copy of it, and I can provide it to committee members, too, if you would. So next, we're going to move to our next invited testifier, and she is the president and CEO of First Alaska's Institute, and I may mispronounce this, but I will try, Laquenne Liz Medicine Crow. If you would please state your name for the record and provide testimony regarding this bill before us.
Oh, goodness, geez, how up. My name is Lagunai Liz Medicine Crow, and I'll be happy to type that in the chat for the note taker, if that would be helpful. I work as the president CEO of First Alaskans Institute. Madam Chair, Senators, Senator Stevens, Kunishchish Hawa so much for inviting First Alaskans Institute to share a few words about this bill and about the potential that we see in this bill. I was really actually happy to see the committee substitute containing a simple sentence to include within civics as education our tribal government systems as well. And it is to that point that I really want to speak to. You know, I'm a product of the Alaska public education system. I went to school both here in my village of Qihkwan. You might know it as Cake, K-A-K-E on the map, and also in Juneau, in the Juneau public school system. And quite honestly, I was trying, in preparation for this testimony, I was trying to recall at any time when anything relevant to me as a tribal citizen was ever mentioned in any of my schools. Although I have, through my family, a very strong connection through my community to my tribe. I'm an enrolled citizen of the organized village of Cake. And my family and many of our community members have been so involved in ensuring that our tribal government is strong and taking care of our citizens here. And I've been able to watch and learn very much from what it means to be someone who cares about your community and who steps forward to serve and to take care of the things that need to be addressed within our communities. But never once did I ever have the opportunity to learn about the sovereignty of my tribal government, what a tribal government was, how it was different from state government, how state government and federal government and our tribal governments are three sovereigns operating in Alaska to this day. It was just a void of understanding the critical role of tribal governments in the well-being of all of Alaska. And what I really appreciate about this bill is that it is saying that we will no longer erase one-third of that sovereignty picture that we have in Alaska. That when we talk about what it means to be a citizen. Now, too often in Alaska's history, the divisiveness and the racial inequities between Alaska Native peoples and those who now call Alaska home have allowed us to blindside our own best interest in the education that our children receive. Now, at First Alaskans Institute, I'm not too sure how many of you have had a chance to engage with us directly. We do provide an Alaska Native governance and protocols training. And this is what I want to mention in terms of this disservice. You as elected officials are making decisions every day about the well-being of Alaskans. But how can you make those decisions with the best available information if you've never had a chance to learn about tribal governments? We have 229 in Alaska. Those 229 tribal governments have created an incredible Alaska tribal healthcare system, which I think all Alaskans probably know of better today than they did before this pandemic, because it has exemplified the power of tribal governance and about what can happen when people are put in charge of their own destiny, which is essentially the same kind of story Alaskans put forward in their pursuit to become a state. So there shouldn't be a tension between our tribal governments and our state governments. There should be an opportunity for people to understand that one plus one equals three. Three chances for our children in Alaska to know more, to be better citizens, to understand what it means when somebody says, I'm a tribal citizen, and understand where that relationship comes from and how long it has been here. Our federally recognized tribes today are modern manifestations of our indigenous people in Alaska that long predates the United States and the state of Alaska. And that sovereignty, that inherent sovereignty that we have, is not dissimilar, although it is different, from state sovereignty and federal sovereignty. Imagine the power our children will have when they can understand those three concepts and know how to make informed decisions and build relationships because of it. And we haven't had that opportunity in Alaska yet. We have kind of stifled our own development by not including it previously. And this is an opportunity to change that and to change the trajectory of where we go as a state. I can't imagine what it would be like to be a child learning about these things, inquiring about these things, learning how to critique these things, understanding the responsibility you have to them. You know, it's not just about the benefits that you receive as a state citizen. It is also about the responsibilities. The same can be said about our tribal governments and the federal government. And by including Alaska Native tribal governance within the civics education of our public education students, I believe that we will also make some really big shifts in some of the racial dynamics that have played too long a part and strangled the growth of Alaska. Because our history is embedded in the civics. And when you have a better understanding of history, you have a better understanding of your responsibility as a citizen. And that is why I wanted to testify today and to thank Senator Stevens and the co-sponsors for this bill. And there's Chishawa for allowing me to testify.
Thank you very much. Do we have questions? I want to thank you, and I'm going to say something on the fly, and committee members can let me know what they think, but I personally know that I need an education in tribal governments, and as community regional affairs, that might be a presentation that would be good for us to understand. And so, Liz, we may be in touch with you to invite you back to do that. And as a stakeholder, I would imagine that you would be working with the Deed Commissioner Johnson and helping them as they develop that curriculum. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, if I may, yes. And I also want to say that our elders and our ancestors thought about us long before we entered this room, because a number of years ago now, cultural standards for Native education were already created. So we have a really good foundation and framework to build off of. And as Commissioner Johnson knows, we'll be ready to stand beside him and help make sure that we are able to create a really robust curriculum and assessment that reflects our Native people and our tribal governance. And I look forward to it.
Thank you. And I just for members to know, this bill was in the Education Committee prior, and I serve on that committee, and we did not get into this area, so that is actually an important area for us to focus on as part of our responsibility as community and regional affairs. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for your presentation. It was very inspiring, really was. And actually, Madam Chair, you read my mind, because I was thinking the same thing, and I'm just hopeful that we could have this presentation this session and not next session. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and stay online if you wouldn't mind, in case there are further questions, or if you have something to add, you can give us a thumbs up and we'll bring you back on. So our third invited testimony is Jennifer Knutson, Senior Director, Teacher and Learning at the Anchorage School District. Thank you, Ms. Knutson, for being with us today. Please introduce yourself for the record and provide your testimony on SB 72.
Okay, thank you, Chair Hughes. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Thank you. Well, thank you for inviting Dr. Bishop to provide testimony on SB 72. I'm Jenny Knudsen, and I'm the Senior Director of Teaching and Learning for the Anchorage School District, and I'm sitting in for Dr. Bishop today. I would like to just start first by saying thank you to the prior two people who testified, because I'm very excited about what they said, and as a district, we're really happy that civics is a focus of this bill. In Anchorage School District, we have been embedding civics into our social studies and history courses in grades 6 through 12 in alignment with standards. But what this bill does is it really provides an opportunity for us to review and strengthen what that looks like in our curriculum and our instruction, and working with the state and other tribal groups to have a high quality focused curriculum. I was excited about what was talked about and how we can strengthen understanding of governance by our Alaska Native groups. We have had a wonderful opportunity in our third grade Alaska Studies curriculum this year by partnering with elders and cultural consultants in the development of that curriculum. And we have just finished it, and it has provided a very rich curriculum for our students that is highly accurate, and it really helps them learn about the place in which we live. And it does touch on some of the government pieces of it, but that whole piece of partnering with cultural consultants was a really big strength and benefit in our district, and I'm excited about the possibilities of that and looking at our civics instruction. By having a statewide curriculum, that's really going to benefit our students, because it's going to ensure that they have the skills and knowledge that they need for meaningful participation in public life and being strong citizens in today's world. And it's also going to help districts to reflect on what they're doing to potentially strengthen the curriculum that they already have across the social studies and history courses that are offered. I want to touch a little bit on the assessment component of the bill, and I would just like to say that we're pleased with the adjustments that have been made to that component, including assessment that is developed in conjunction with the curriculum. It's really going to provide feedback, not only how are kids doing and what are their skills, but what we want to do in education is we want feedback to our teachers about students' knowledge and skills so that we can adjust instruction so that we ensure that kids are making that growth and demonstrating those skills to be successful in life. And so an assessment isn't just getting information on student performance. It really needs to inform the instruction so that we do better and we can adjust our practices as we go forward. So it provides not only information to the teachers to make those adjustments, but it's also going to provide feedback to both districts and the state about the effectiveness of our instruction with the curriculum. And that's going to allow us to continuously improve that civics education for our students. Currently in the ASD, the other thing that I really appreciate and that we've talked to with Dr. Bishop is the fact that students taking the test will show up on their transcripts. In the Anchorage School District, we have an assessment, a formal assessment for our students who are doing world languages to obtain a seal of biliteracy, and that shows up on their transcript. And this is really attractive to colleges and businesses, and we really think that having that information on a student's transcript that reflects that they took the civics assessment and have learned about how they could be a good citizen and apply this in their learning as they continue on post being in K-12 education, that will be a benefit for students in similar ways as our seal of biliteracy is on our transcripts for kids for their world languages. And just in summary, we find a lot of positive aspects with this bill and really appreciate the work that has gone into the team that has improved on it. And we really look forward to, if this bill passes, really working with the state in partnership and other tribal organizations on the curriculum components and the assessment and ensuring that they're high quality, rigorous, and really aligned to the assessment as we move forward. So I want to thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much. Are there questions? I have a question for you, Jennifer.
Yes.
You mentioned the World Language Assessment appears on transcript, does it indicate the score the student received?
No, it does not. So students take the assessment, and there are some criteria around the seal of biliteracy to get that grade point average and different things. But on the transcript, it just indicates that the student passed the assessment. We use STAMP, which is an assessment for world languages, that they took the assessment or passed the assessment.
So it does indicate that they passed it, correct?
It does. It does indicate that they passed it.
So one of my concerns, and we had changes, and we're trying to get bills moving along, and it is a policy discussion, and I, you know, would be happy to work with the sponsor, but I shared the same concerns that Senator Myers expressed, and I think our Senate Education Committee did somewhat as a whole, but we knew it was coming here. And we could do some further work. So, and we got some feedback from superintendents. You know, we always hear that phrase, unfunded mandates, and those kind of things. And many districts are already doing much of this. It sounds like Anchorage School District is. So just aligning what you're doing now with what DEED might produce to make sure you're covering all the bases so your students could do well on the assessment. One of my concerns is if we're asking students, we're tasking teachers to instruct the children in this material, but they know that it doesn't matter whether they pass or fail. I am kind of concerned how motivated and engaged they might be. So I know there's concerns, especially when you get something up and running. We don't want a lot of 12th graders to just because of this, not be able to graduate initially, right? So what I'm thinking that might be a way we could work through this is to require that the score actually appear on the transcript. So the student would know that would be carried with them, and they would hopefully want to get a passing score on that transcript. Is that something that you think might be helpful in students being more engaged in the coursework? And then my idea, and I don't know if the sponsor would agree, is after we're showing that we've got a good curriculum, it's working, the districts kind of are in the swing of it, then we could change this to require actually a student pass in order to graduate. What would you think of initially starting with including the score on the transcript with the goal over several years of requiring the student pass?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I think that's an interesting question. The first part of that I would focus on is the curriculum, because having a score on a transcript for a student isn't going to be a motivating factor necessarily for how well they do or how much they know in civics. We really want to make sure we have a curriculum that is engaging, that gives kids the opportunity to practice some of what they're learning, and they're not memorizing everything, but they can apply it and they can show what they know, and they can show the connections between the different parts of government and what that means to be a citizen. So in thinking about the assessment, I think it's really important to start with the curriculum and then align that assessment to the curriculum so that we can be measuring what we're teaching students. From a student's perspective, from an adult perspective, you know, we look at scores and all that, but I don't know necessarily how motivating that is from the student's perspective. So that's where I would suggest starting, is with the curriculum and then having that follow afterwards and seeing where that goes, because it really is going to depend on how the assessment is developed and how valid and reliable it is in measuring those skills.
Okay, well, I'll just get on the record and the commissioner, I believe, is still on and listening, is an assessment actually can include a portfolio that shows activities and engagement and maybe a student showing up at a city council meeting, that kind of thing. So that can be part of it, but I'm kind of shocked that you would say that a student's grade might not motivate them. I mean, students are in school. Students are motivated to get good grades. Some students aren't, but most kids are not wanting to fail their coursework. So if you're recording a score, I think it would motivate students. And are you sure that you want to stick by your statement that posting a score would not be motivating to students?
Well, thank you for that question. I don't think I'm saying that a score isn't motivating for students, but we do a lot of assessment with students. We do benchmark assessments. We do PEAKS assessments. So unless it's meaningful for kids and they can see their growth over time, that's what I'm saying is we have to really make sure it's connected to what they're learning. I agree with you. There's a lot of kids that are intrinsically motivated by having good grades and seeing that on their transcripts, but I would like to see that assessment really linked to the instruction so that students see the outcome of that when they're learning. And I really do appreciate what you just said about having different means of assessing kids and being able to show the skills that they're learning as opposed to maybe just a fill in the blank bubble type of assessment. And I think that is a really interesting way that we could go to really have kids demonstrate what they know.
Okay. Are there any other questions that anyone might have? All right. Does the sponsor have any further comments that you'd like to make?
Sure. I just thank you, and I appreciate the three folks who testified. And it's interesting, Liz Medicine Crowe used the word responsibility. I didn't say that word at all in my notes. I'm going to say it in the future because I think it's a responsibility being a citizen, a responsibility to know what's going on, to vote, to participate. I talked earlier about there are a lot of good teachers out there. There are a lot of districts that are doing a great job. And not everyone is. Some are not doing it at all. I think it's right that the start of this has to be a good curriculum. One thing we haven't talked much about is it does require the Department of Education or the school board to make a report every year to the education committees in the House and the Senate. So we know what's going on. And so in time, I think we might find that there are more restrictions we want to make. We want to make it a little, as you're talking about, maybe even posting the score. I'm not sure that's the right idea to start with. I just made a note that if you look at our citizens, a lot are not motivated, and a lot of our voters could probably not pass the immigration test. So, you know, that's not a requirement. We don't require that of anybody who votes to pass the test. But I think it begins an improvement of our children, of our students, to help them become more knowledgeable. That report is very important. I think it's important that it be on the transcript as well. So thank you very much. I appreciate your comments, and I appreciate your hearing this. Thank you.
Okay. I did try. That was sort of like your final comments, but now I've got two questions. So I hope that's okay, because I'm wondering, do we have a list of all the districts in the state and whether they are or are not offering it? And then what grade level? I know I was speaking to someone who said in their community, the Alaska Native Studies is in the ninth grade freshman, and then the government civics portion is as a senior. And if they were to take the assessment, there might be a little problem because it was 4 years since they took what we would hope would also have the tribal government piece added. So do we have a list that we can provide to the committees?
There's not a lot of consistency across the state, and that's one thing I know Tim has looked into that, and I think that's one thing you'll find is that it's inconsistent, and this might bring some consistency to it. So Tim, can you talk to us about what other school districts are doing?
For the record, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Madam Chair, thank you for that question. I was alerted to that possibly coming. In the last 24 hours, I carefully reviewed all 54 school districts' websites contained in this binder. And at this time, I haven't been able to drill deeply into it, but at least on the surface, what I can see on their website, there's three school districts currently that specifically reference either quote-unquote civics, Inupiaq studies in Northwest, Arctic, or a NILCO, quote, native history in the Yukon-Koyukuk district. So there is a lot of civics-type activity out there. Most typically, when it's referred to as social studies, which would include U.S. history, world history, U.S. government, current events, economics, and, of course, the statutory requirement of a half a credit a semester in Alaska studies. So that data is out there. But there's quite a diverse and colorful variety of their approaches to that. It's part of local control. But currently there's no clearinghouse. There's no central location to receive the curriculum, or certainly, to my knowledge, not an assessment that's on civics or government in order to graduate. Certainly not that. There is, as should would be expected, end of course exams that would contribute to a grade in that course. And again, it's with at least regarding Alaska studies, the simple fact that they have to take it.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for your time and effort in the last 24 hours trying to tease that out. If you get further information and drill down any further, you could certainly let us know when we bring the bill back up. Of those districts, in the material you have, can you tell whether it's required for graduation in some districts and not in others?
Madam Chair, so each district, and by state law, they have to complete 3 credits, 3 years of social studies. And those social studies include their options to choose between things such as U.S. history, U.S. government, current events, world history, those things. They have to take the 3, but what those 3 exactly are is where they get to choose between them, with the exception of the half credit in Alaska studies. But that is definitely required to take. Of those 3 credits, a half a credit is Alaska studies.
Okay, thank you. I just note for the record that Senator David Wilson has joined us. Because we didn't focus on the tribal government piece in the prior committee, and we're going to be doing that here, perhaps we can talk offline, because I would think that maybe some superintendents from some of the rural districts might want to weigh in, or whether we do it actually in the committee, or you communicate with us and give us that input, or we have it in writing or something. I think that would be an important part of this process that I'd like to be sure we don't neglect. So if there are no further questions, we will set this bill aside at this time. Thank you very, very much. This is an important bill. We appreciate your time today. Now we're going to move on to Senate Bill 17, which was first heard on February 25th, and we have a committee substitute for the bill. So after Senator Begich and his staff join us at the table, I will take a motion from Senator Myers. Okay, right. Go ahead. Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that committee substitute for Senate Bill 17, Work Order 32-Lima Sierra 0187/Bravo be adopted as the working document.
And I will object for purposes of discussion. And we have Senator Begich here. Would you like to go over the changes in the committee substitute?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Tom Begich, State Senator for District J. I'm actually going to have my Ted Stevens legislative intern, Connor Owens, do that. This is the first bill he's been carrying for us, and he's been doing diligent work on it. So if I may turn it over to him, Madam Chair.
Please. We'd be happy to have you present. So please identify yourself for the record and explain to us how this version is different than the previous.
Okay. For the record, my name is Connor Owens, staff to Senator Begich. I will be reading the summary of changes from version A to version B. The first change is on page 2 and covers lines 20 to 23. This change clarifies that the energy audits the state will perform under this legislation aren't going to be large investment grade audits. Instead, the audits are meant to be minimal, level 1, ASHRAE audits that can be performed either in person or virtually. The idea is that these more minimal audits will reduce the fiscal note of this bill, but still allow the state to determine if there are potential projects for energy savings.
Madam Chairman, if I can interrupt.
Yes, please.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Again, Tom Begich for the record. This was specifically one of the requests that came from the testifiers during the meeting, so we wanted to be sure that you knew that was the idea being that you would do a preliminary, perhaps virtual or other audit, that the real intensive audits would be done by the companies once it was determined that there was a need.
Okay, great. We proceed.
For the record, Connor Owens, staff to Senator Begich. The second change is on page 4 and covers line 13. It clarifies that the new office being established, the Rapid Economic Recovery Office, is meant to use its expertise to support and contract for these bundled projects so that facilities don't have to navigate the retrofitting process on their own. This will be especially helpful for facilities with lower numbers of employees and for rural facilities. So this just makes it clear that the new office is there to leverage expertise and help communities and facilities with these projects.
Okay, thank you.
And the third and final change is on page 4 and covers lines 17 through 26. This change aligns terminology with existing statute. It replaces clean energy with the definition of renewable energy. This is meant so that we don't have to create a new definition for what energy sources this bill addresses, and allows us to stay consistent with previous state statute.
And Madam Chairman, if I may?
Yes, Senator Begich.
Again, Tom Begich. For the record, I had inadvertently transferred language from the lower 48 to the bill, and it was my mistake. I should have checked the statutes to see what the definitions were. My apologies for that, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. So do we have questions from committee members? And I'll just note, looks like we've got a few lifelines here. So we have Christopher Hodgen, an engineer and architect from DOT and Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. And the other two are not online that are listed, unless they are on the phone. Okay, so we may possibly have Alan Weitzner with ADA and Curtis Sayer with Alaska Energy Authority. So we'll, if they show up, I will let you all know. So your choices on the menu today are Senator Begich, Mr. Owens, or Christopher Hodgen, if you have any questions. Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Senator Begich, I understand the idea behind the bill, and I understand spend a little money now, save some more money later. Perfectly normal idea. What I'm concerned about is the diminishing returns. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to retrofit a 50-year-old building. We'd expect to get quite a bit of savings out of that. It's another thing to retrofit a 5-year-old building. And what I'm concerned about is some of the language that's in the bill in terms of how many buildings we want to work on, the dollar figures and things like that. What I'm concerned about, and I was looking through the presentation from last time where it was talking about how many things have been retrofitted and the dollar savings annually. I'm just concerned that if we move forward, that we will spend more and get less. And I just wanted to hear your reaction to that and what we expect to be the end result.
I think through the chair, Tom Begich, for the record again, through the chair, Senator Meyer, that is the perfect question. There were two issues that came up last time. One was even a suggestion from one person testifying that maybe we look at a 50% as opposed to 25% of the building's 5,000 square feet and more that we might address. And part of the reason why I actually rejected that is because we need to keep that number at a lower percentage, precisely because of diminishing returns, maybe for the reason of not wanting to overextend the state in any regard. But the second thing, and more importantly, is that's why it's a public-private partnership in this bill. The whole way the ESCO works is you got to have a saleable product. So the initial work of the virtual audit, or the audit that was described by Mr. Owens, basically allows you to take a look at these structures to first see if they're even relevant in terms of a retrofit, or if they're not, if they look like they'd be a good investment quality grade. The second step in the process is, once you've determined that there may be some investment quality grade retrofitting to be done, would be to find a way to bundle that and see if there was a private entity interested in pursuing it. That's the whole point. No private company is going to invest in something with diminishing returns. And the guarantee in the bill is that 25% or half of those savings, 25% of the overall bill, would be for the reduction of energy prices, which is where you get to that $40 million savings mark over time. And 25% would go to covering the initial loan. ADA serves only as a vehicle, in a sense, for managing that loan. So the whole process protects you from exactly what you're talking about. You won't find yourself in a situation where the investment made isn't going to be attractive to a business that gets a return, and consequently the state has a guaranteed savings, so the state will be guaranteed the same return. that's the guarantee of the way you develop the loan product here. And if it helps, the lifeline that is on the line, Chris has been actively involved in how we did this with the from the bill from 2010, which is the bill that has saved us over that period of time, roughly a decade, has saved us around $40 million in cost savings in terms of energy costs. So he might be able to go into more detail if that answer wasn't sufficient. But the real key here is private entities aren't going to invest in a product that doesn't give them a return, and we're guaranteed a return as part of that process. So that's part of the formula. So if they're looking at that saying, nope, there's not a good margin here, that's never going to be developed. We're only setting a target of 25% of those buildings 5,000 square feet or greater.
With your permission, I would like to bring Mr. Hodgkins on to continue that, because he's been there, done that, and he could perhaps give his perspective. So, Mr. Hodgkin, if you heard the question, could you comment? And if you'd like Senator Myers to repeat it, we can make that happen.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Are you able to hear me?
We are. Thank you.
Thank you very much. For the record, my name is Christopher Hodgkin. I'm with our Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. And through the chair, Senator Myers, I believe the question you were thinking in terms of the age of buildings and the quantities of buildings and the effectiveness of the program on relatively new buildings compared to older buildings that may be 50 years old. Is that correct, Senator?
That's roughly it, yes.
Thank you very much. Through the chair, one of the interesting things we've seen about the program is we have done retrofits on older buildings as well as newer buildings that have been constructed in the last decade. Some of what we're seeing is that building technology is getting more complex and more complex and having various interactions with each other. So sometimes those can get out of synchronicity and out of sequence, and that can be lost, and you have all of these relatively new pieces of technology functioning in your building but are not optimized. So what we've seen is some significant opportunity in some newer buildings and some newer buildings that have complex systems, and going in there and taking an objective analysis has been fruitful in finding and implementing those improvements.
You have a follow-up, Senator Myers?
No, I'm good, thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hodgkin. We appreciate that. Just as an order of business, we haven't actually adopted the working document, so if there are no further objections, I'm removing mine. Are there further objections? No. So the CS is now adopted as the committee's working document. Are there further questions before we move to public testimony? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to open public testimony on SB 17. And is there anyone in the room who would like to testify regarding SB 17? Seeing none, I am looking online, and I do not see anyone who has signed up to testify, but I will say that Curtis Thayer has joined us from the Alaska Energy Authority. So we could put you, Curtis, under public testimony if you'd like to make some comments about the bill. Would you like to? And if so, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Yeah, this is Curtis Thayer with the Alaska Energy Authority. I am just here in a capacity of listening and answering any questions.
Okay, are there any questions for Mr. Thayer? Seeing none, and I do not see anyone else on the line or anyone in the room, so we will close public testimony at this time. If there are no questions, and I'm not seeing any, we will set this bill aside at this point. It's my intention to consider amendments for this bill at our next meeting, and the deadline for submitting those amendments is Wednesday, April 7th. And I also will mention regarding SB 72, Civics Education, the amendments are due the same day, Wednesday, 7th at 3 p.m., We plan to hold the next Senate Committee and Regional Affairs Committee on Thursday, April 8th, and it is my intention on April 8th to take up amendments on both those bills, and if it is the will of the committee, to move them out on that day. So seeing no other business before us, we will adjourn at 4:30 p.m.